At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. A special episode for you today, a break from our recollection series. We're still before the draft content coming up, but we're going to follow up with a really fun episode we had last year with Ravens practice squad player Jeremy Lucien. Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you? Thanks for having me again.
Wonderful to have you. Am I mispronouncing your name? Is it actually Lucien?
So that's the American way to say it. So my dad's side of the family, they're Haitian. So the correct way to say it is Lucien, but growing up, like, a lot of people will mispronounce it. So we just tell everyone just to say Lucien. So I guess you could, you know, pick whichever one feels better for you. But Lucien is the proper way to say it.
All right. I'll stick with that then. And if I'm messing it up a little bit, I've got one of those last names also people have just been mispronouncing for a long time. So that that works. So anyway, spent most of the year on the Ravens practice squad. One of the reasons we want to talk to you is to kind of get inside the life of a player who, you know, working hard as hell on the practice squad, a player who played very well in the preseason last year, and a player who, you know, I would still hope and expect would latch on somewhere with an NFL team. But nonetheless, in your very first year, you're cut twice. So I guess we ought to start with that.
So it was definitely it was a bit of a roller coaster. As you said, you know, training camp went really well. I was fortunate enough to earn a spot on the practice squad. And, you know, things were really trending upwards from camp. I was doing really well on practice the whole season. But, you know, unfortunately, the dark side of the league that a lot of people don't really see firsthand is what happens with practice squad guys. So, you know, unfortunately, just got caught up in a little bit of roster gymnastics. So I was I lasted for majority of the season. I think it was around December. They ended up bringing me up to the office, no fault of my own. It wasn't anything that I could do about it. But they needed to let me go so that they could bring somebody else in. You know, they told me that, they still love everything I was doing. They love me as a player. But it was just something that they had to do. Just the, you know, the business side of it. And I understood it. So it definitely sucked being in that position, but I was still, you know, for one thing, happy to have gotten the opportunity in the first place. And so I've made it that far. I thought that spoke volumes to just, you know, my hard work, dedication to, you know, getting better, that I was able to last that long. So, you know, I kept it professional, shook hands with the guy that I spoke to when they released me. And then first thing I did was call my dad and my agent, just, you know, break the news to them. I called on my family and let them know. So it was definitely a rough few weeks. I was at home for, I think it was 3.5 weeks. And I was on the couch. I wasn't on the roster. I was making sure that I was still, you know, training to stay in shape, because you never know what's going to happen if, you know, another team is going to call you, you know, to give you another opportunity.
You said it was about 3.5 weeks, and then the Ravens re-signed you, right?
Yeah. So it was New Year's Day. They ended up calling me to let me know they wanted to bring me back. So it was a pretty nice start to the new year. Yeah, January 1st, they called me, and I think a few hours later, I was on a plane back to Baltimore. And then the next day, I went back into the facility to get re-signed. So I was feeling pretty good at that point. Once again, first thing I did was call everybody I know, like, you know, let them know the good news. I think that was the week that we played the Steelers. Yeah, so that was the week 18. So I was there for that week. The bye week was the week after. And then the week of the first playoff game, I ended up getting released again for, you know, the same reasons as the first time. Nothing I could do about it, just some roster management that they needed to do. So, you know, they brought me back upstairs again. And
It's an interesting dynamic because the Ravens practice squad is a bunch of older players. It's very unusual. It's not really what the practice squad is originally intended for. It is meant to be a developmental unit, you know, in some ways to fill out your scout teams, but in other ways to just have a backup at most for most position groups. And you can see it's very well divided out among them. And the Ravens had a bunch of guys this last year who were 6 and 8 year veterans in the league. And current roster rules and largely born of the COVID era now allow for many more of the veteran players. It used to be at one time, I think it was only, you could only be less than 2 years in the league that you to be on the practice squad at all.
I believe so. And I think it was, the cap was 10 and only just recently got expanded to 16.
Yeah. And now you can have, I don't know how many is 6, 7, 8 players who are veterans and a certain number of peremptory exclusions and whatnot. But anyway, it's a very different world we live in. So the point I'm making here is that the practice squad is not used as much anymore to develop players. But if ever there was a developmental player on the roster, a guy they're really trying to see, hey, what can you do next year? It'd be you.
Yep. And yeah, so it's tough only having 53. The roster numbers are very small, and you can only have, 48, I think, active on game day. So a very small number of the initial 90 that you start with during the training camp period are you able to actually go into, you know, regular season games with. So having the older guys on the practice squad is definitely valuable. So you can have, if somebody gets hurt, can't really go, like, you can have somebody to potentially fill their shoes. But then, like you said, there are a couple guys on practice squads that they're seen as more developmental guys. So, you know, me, a few of my other teammates, guys that had a really good training camp, but unfortunately there wasn't a roster spot at the time for them to sign us. So, you know, we got released after training camp was over, cleared waivers, and then we were brought back, and then we just developed throughout the entire season. And then, you know, the goal is that hopefully we continue to learn, grow as players, as people, improve our technique. And then we eventually, you know, pan out down the line.
So some of the other kind of developmental guys on the Ravens, and it's, you can just look at this and look by years. I'm not giving away any secrets that the Ravens have in saying this. Tayshaun Manning, the guard out of Kentucky, would fall in this category. Travis Vokolek, who got snatched away by the Arizona Cardinals, unfortunately. And there are some others too, and I'm not remembering all the names, but then there's other guys on the practice side, like Laquan Treadwell, who's been in the league a long time. In fact, I think Laquan Treadwell might have been a number one pick at one time.
I think he was.
And got a couple cups of coffee with the Ravens during the year, but most of the time he spent on the practice squad. And then you got some other guys that they're bringing in. Some veteran safeties have been around, so I guess that's competition really for you and people like Adams and DHC being around. One of the things about the Ravens practice squad that's well known, and maybe you've seen this, is they get poached very regularly. I'm not saying it doesn't happen all over the league, but the Ravens, and particularly in terms of offensive and defensive linemen and some other positions as well, often have players taken from them. Mm-hmm. And obviously there are two this year. The first was Vokolek. The second was DHC, who ended up starting against the Ravens in the playoffs for the Texans.
Right. It was pretty funny, seeing him out there on the field. And just throughout the season too, we would be in special teams film, watching whoever we're going to play against. And then they just happened to be playing the Texans, and then, oh, look, there goes DSC on the screen. So it was just kind of cool. Cause he was just here. He was here during the preseason, and then like a couple points during the regular season, sharing the field with him. So it was nice to see him over with them doing his thing. So I did see a number of players get poached this year. You mentioned Travis Vokolek. So he was definitely one of the people I was closest to on the team. Cause he was a undrafted rookie like myself. He was actually my locker mate. His locker was right next to mine. So he and I are talking every single day. He and Owen Wright were two of the people that I was communicating with the most the first time that I had gotten released, actually first and second time. And they were just comforting me throughout the whole thing. Letting me know that they believed everything was going to be straight, and they knew I would be back somewhere soon. But I think it was, when was it? I think after the second time, no, after the first time I had gotten released, he had ended up getting claimed by the Cardinals. And I was pretty shocked. Cause it just seemed so sudden. And I was talking to him about the whole process, like how it happened. And he said that he got a call that, the Cardinals had claimed him. And then a few hours later, he was on a plane out to Arizona. So it's just crazy how quickly things can turn over like that.
I, I have a question about that. Maybe you know, just from knowing Travis personally, the standard thing in the past for linemen that I've known, for other people, is that they will then go to the Ravens and say, hey, the Cardinals have claimed me. I don't really want to go, but or maybe sometimes the opportunity is too good. You can't pass it up. And he realizes he's behind three tight ends here. There's not really a discussion to be had. Is there typically a communication with the current team to at least let them know, hey, these guys have made me an offer. I'm going out to sign it. Do you want to make a move, kind of thing?
I'm not entirely sure. I would have to go back and ask him again. I'm not specifically sure the exact situation that happened.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the regular work week with the Ravens and what it looks like for a practice squad player. And I know there's a difference between whether it's a home or a road game, but let's talk about a home game first.
Okay. So for a home game, so in general, the only real difference between the practice squad players and the like active roster players is that the active roster guys are the ones who play on the weekend. So as far as a home game goes, we're all doing the same thing during the week. So we all go to the same meetings. We all do the same stuff before practice, meals at the same times. Actual practice, we're all doing the same drills and, practicing at the same time. It's not like the practice squad guys are off to the side, doing their own thing while the active roster guys are doing something over here. Like, we're all together the entirety of the day. So the first day of the week is starts on Wednesday. So that's the, first practice day. So we'll practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, walk through Saturday. Game on Sunday. So for a home game, we'll have night meetings at the hotel on Saturday evenings.
That's something a lot of people don't know, is that even when you play a home game in Baltimore, that basically football players, they have a reputation, fair or not, for, and it's probably fair for some of any team's 53, that they are like herding cats, and you don't want to let them get out of the hotel or not be where they're supposed to be at the right time on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. So you keep them in a hotel downtown. Which hotel is it, by the way, for the Ravens? Or maybe that's information we shouldn't talk about because it's supposed to be a secret.
I'll avoid that giving an answer.
So it'll be a hotel somewhere anyway, downtown, yes. I assume, that you stay at. Wouldn't want to have the autograph hounds all over you. That actually would be a concern.
It's funny, though, because when we've been there, there have been a couple groups of people that have noticed us there. And it's like, we'll see them going up and down the elevator, just like kind of gawking at us, which is pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What happens on Saturday at the hotel? What does your day look like there?
So all Saturdays for at the hotel is just like final, finishing touches on game plan that the coaches want to put on. For the most part, it just turns into people giving motivational speeches. So we'll meet as a defensive unit. Offense will go and have their meetings. Special teams will meet, and then the final thing will be we'll have like an entire team meeting, and then Coach Harbaugh will speak, and another coach that like he designates will, give a final word for the night to get everybody pumped up for the next day. So that's not required for practice squad guys to be at, but they like us to be. So it's mm-hmm. it's one of those things that's like required, but they don't want to tell you it is, but like you better be there. I was there every single week. But it's nice. It's just cool to be with the guys the day before the game, just like see what the energy is like. So,
okay. So on Saturday by, I think it's 4:30 or there's a certain cutoff time, the NFL transactions are in, the practice squad elevations are known at that point for a Sunday game. So you already know you're not going to play on Sunday on Saturday, if that's the case, if you're not elevated. And then you're still in a special teams meeting watching guys, call out their numbers. We've heard the story from Collinsworth, for years, that he talks about how they make sure that the right 11 are on the field. And he always brings it up whenever they have 10 men on the field on special teams, and you count out 1 to 11. I assume that process is fairly similar for most.
So all of that stuff happens earlier in the day. We have our like final pregame walkthrough in the morning. So that's when all of that will go down. You better make sure that you're like out on the field when you're supposed to be, because it's trouble if you're not. So,
yeah, the Ravens, particularly during the Martindale era, so this happened less with McDonald, but with Martindale, they had a lot of substitution on third down, and they had one year they had about four times they had 10 men on the field. And there was a previous year where they had 9 men on the field on one play. And incredibly, the Raiders only got a 4-yard run out of it. But it was that could have been really bad. And the Arizona Cardinals are known for being one of the weakest teams in the NFL. They had 10 men on the field in one season. It was half of the total in the NFL. So anyway, yeah. Teams that substitute a lot. So anyway, keeping in touch still with some players who are on the team now.
Yep. So like I mentioned, Travis Wilcock and Owen Wright. So I talked to them a bunch. I'm still in the DB group chat. So, you know, talk to the guys in there, often. So it's, you know, it's still good to hear from them. And then you know, a couple more people here and there. So,
okay. All right. That's great. You talked a little bit about the work week. Now for a home game, you're on the field on a Sunday, and they lay out everybody else's uniform. And what do they lay out for you guys?
So for us, so practice squad guys, and then just in general, anybody who isn't active for the game. So you could be, you know, one of the 53-man roster guys, but you're told that you're not playing that day. They put like a little flyer up on the wall. It has the uniform for the day. It'll be sweatpants, a hoodie. They'll give you a shirt, some pants, or like athletic pants. You can just pick whatever you want to put on, but you need to wear one of those things. They don't want you to go out onto the field with, if you're wearing something that has like another logo on it, that's not sponsored by the NFL, random stuff that's like not associated with the Ravens, you really shouldn't be wearing that. So like, yeah, they give us a specific uniform to wear, but it's always comfortable. We get to keep it afterwards. So they give us a lot of hats every week. So I have like a collection of hats in my room.
Oh, that's great. But you can't wear your own street clothes out there. Even if you dress up nice in a suit and whatnot, they definitely wouldn't want you doing that out on the field. You wear some sort of gear.
No, you might not have any time for that. So you want to try to avoid that.
All right. Outstanding. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about here? Let's talk about the money a little bit on the practice squad, because I think this is something that people assume football players are all very well paid, and it's not like the practice squad you starve or anything. But on the other hand, it does compete with other professional objectives, I guess you might have.
Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a lot of money, but it's not like the amounts that people think that all football players are getting, like, you know, the multi-millions. We're not getting that. So for a first year player like myself, I think the base was $12,000 a week. Mm-hmm. Depending on, you know, what state you're playing in, that's going to determine what kind of taxes get taken out of that. But yeah, base is $12,000 a week. I think that's about, over the course of an 18-week season, that was $216,000 for the season. And then that's separate from, so if you make the playoffs, then like you'll continue to get that $12,000 for every week that you're in there for. And then you have the option to, put a certain amount towards your 401k. So me and like a lot of other players were, you know, doing that throughout the season to make sure that we're growing that on the side. But yeah, it's a good amount of money, but it's not enough to, it's not so much that like you can just start like blowing it willy-nilly on, you know. Oh, yeah. So I had to make sure that I was, you know, managing my money well. That's why I'm thankful that I have the parents that I do, and they've sat me down multiple, even before I got into the league, they've sat me down and said like, you know, hey, this is your plan. Like, this is where you want to be. You can't be spending a ton of money here and there. Like, you still need to be smart about, you know, how you're spending it all. I do also have a financial advisor that I communicate with, every now and then. We have, you know, plans to go over what my finances are looking like, my spending history, and how that is. How my expenses are against my, like, the amount of money that I have coming in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pretty good support network. So I've been able to keep a good amount of money on hand, which has definitely helped, because especially with the fact that I was released 2 times, that obviously impacted how much money that I was able to make during the season. So I really had to be smart about how much I was spending. So I could make sure that I had like a good amount saved away in case there was any emergency. So
most you have your whatever, you have your own personal expenses in terms of training that continue to accrue as an unsigned player.
That's the thing. So you only make money during the season. Once the season's over, like it kind of gets, it gets cut off. You can make a little bit during the spring if you report for optional workouts. But for the most part, you're not really earning anything from, like, let's say you go to the Super Bowl. So from February until really until September, because September is like when you'll start to actually get paid your contract money. So from February to September, you got to really be smart about how much you're spending. So if you're like, you know, a guy who hasn't really made a lot, you gotta be careful.
I know you have a great head on your shoulders. It's clear that you're being very careful with your money and just talking about your investments and whatnot. I've met your dad, very impressive man. I'm sure whatever advice he's giving to you is terrific. But I think I want to get back to, the off season regimen a little bit and what you're doing now. And I'm really interested because I know a lot of players work on positional skills, but give me kind of an idea of the mix of what you're doing between strength and conditioning and positional skills.
So after the season ended, I did just like everybody will, took a little bit of time off just to kind of let my body recover, especially because this was my rookie season. And, you know, they say that your rookie season is usually the longest because it's, you go from the start of your college season until the end of your rookie season. Like you're pretty much on go the entire time. You don't really have a whole lot of time to rest. So took a little bit of time off to, you know, just let my body reset. And then I started training at a gym, back home where I live. So I live in Pennsylvania, but the gym I was going to was just 30 minutes away in New Jersey. So I went there just to, you know, start to get back into the flow of things with some, strength, speed and explosion stuff. And then now I'm down in Miami at a facility called Bomberitos. So I've been here since when I get here. A week and a half ago. So I'm spending a month down here training. So I'm doing, you know, speed, strength, conditioning, some agility work. And then once a week we have been doing position work. So we have a DB trainer, come in and, you know, just take us through about an hour of drills. So it's been good to, you know, get back into the swing of that and make sure that my technique is still solid. And then in the middle of the week, so Wednesdays, we'll do some, like mobility core and we'll do like some pool therapy work. So a lot of guys will do stuff like that just to make sure that they're staying in shape and just staying on top of it. Cause you don't want to take too much time off and, you know, fall completely out of shape. And then It just makes it harder to, you know, get back into it by the time the spring rolls around.
Yeah. I would think that's maybe even harder for the guys, the bigger players on either side of the line who have to maintain a lot of weight, and it can become bad weight very quickly during that off season. Whereas with you, it's going to be much more about technique. So in terms of looking forward to the technique wise to where you are you really trying to focus on safety technique at this point? I know you were a corner in college. The Ravens really converted you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was a corner throughout all of college. I wouldn't say that I want to focus entirely on safety work. I did find it very helpful to have a corner skill set as a safety this year.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes. Anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
It's coverage, like, you know, a lot smoother. So I do want to continue working on, you know, technique as a corner, because that'll always help you. If you can move like a corner and then play a position where you don't need to be moving like a corner, but, you know, just it helps. It'll definitely open a lot more doors. So I do want to continue to work both.
Now, I know you got some great safeties in the room with Marcus and with Kyle Hamilton, obviously, and that creates some crowding, obviously, for the position. Geno had a fantastic year this last year and got paid for it. When in terms of the guy I want to focus on who has a lot of similarities to you, though, is Daryl Worley. Mm-hmm. And Daryl, of course, in 2022 went through a record number of transactions with the Ravens. It was something like 18 on the season. So he was cut, re-signed, brought up from a practice squad, you know, released again, up to the 53, you know, all kinds of things during the season. So, you know, if two cuts and two re-signings seem like a lot, Daryl Worley is your guy for understanding just how that can be. Talk a little bit. And by the way, the other thing, Daryl Worley, a convert from corner to safety, in his case, late in his career, but same kind of issues with there were real questions about his speed coming out of school and moving to safety. He seems like a very smart guy in terms of his football sense. Don't know him personally. Talk a little bit about how working with him has been.
Mm-hmm. Well, so yeah, he's a great guy on and off the field. He was definitely one of the people that I was learning the most from initially over the summer because I mean, as you saw, we sat a lot of our starters throughout you know those preseason games. So it was like he and I were two of the people that were playing more heavily in the preseason. So I thought it definitely was really nice to you know just kind of watch him move around, learn from him. Like you said, he's a convert just like myself. One of the things that you want to see in a converted safety, you know, guy going from corner to safety, is well, how aggressive are they in the run game? Because a lot of corners don't necessarily like to, you know, get their nose in there and tackle, but Worley is probably one of the most aggressive players I've ever seen. And like he will show it. Like when he makes a big play, he will get up and, you know, start like, yeah, like, you know, shouting, screaming. So I definitely tried to emulate that, as much as I could throughout training camp. And then just throughout the season, he would, like, you know, occasionally just drop little like nuggets of wisdom about, just certain things about playing the position that I would need to know. Because this was the first time that I had ever played safety. I didn't touch the position at all in college. So even though I was doing well throughout camp, there were still like a lot of things that that I still had to learn. So it was just nice to, you know, just learn those things from him throughout the year. So yeah, he was definitely a guy I was paying attention to.
He seems like a great one to learn from. If you just look at that first preseason game, and it was the last of the consecutive wins for the Ravens, but he thoroughly dominated the second half of that game. He knew exactly where to be, made play after play. It was almost unfair. You have this.
He was asked to do veteran. A lot too. He was playing the entire game on defense, and then he had to play the whole game on special teams too. So I definitely respected watching that as well.
Yeah. Big changes in the coaching staff for the Ravens this year, obviously, and particularly on the defensive side, where a lot of the good coaches got hired away. I don't think that's a bad thing, by the way. I think it's the sign of a great organization that their coaches are getting hired away. It happened to Belichick. It happened to Andy Reid. You know, it should, if your coaching staff and Harbaugh in particular really knows what he's doing in terms of putting together a coaching staff. But talk a little bit about these guys lost in terms of McDonald and maybe Denard Wilson more directly with you.
Mm-hmm. So they definitely earned it. Watching them throughout the entire season, they were definitely deserving of the spots that they got within the last couple months. Coach McDowell, I think he's a great guy. He's kind of similar to me in the sense that he's like a little bit more reserved, but when it's time to go, like it's like he gets going. That's why it was really special to see like a few times throughout the season when like somebody would make a huge play and like you would see him like kind of get out of character and start, you know, celebrating really crazily. Those were always nice to see. So I'm definitely going to miss him. Coach Denard Wilson too. If you ask like any of the other DBs, like they'll tell you he probably has a saying for literally everything. I don't know how to describe that better. Some kind of like analogy or whatever, to like, just, you know, just describe a lot of situations, but like he's just really a really funny guy. Great dude. He's definitely the kind of person that I could just see myself, you know, going out and grabbing a drink with. Seems like he has a lot of good stories. So yeah, he'll definitely be missed. And I definitely learned a lot from him because I was working more directly with him than Coach McDonald throughout the season because, you know, he was in my meeting room every single day. So, you know, the few times that we'd be watching film, a play of mine would be on the screen. You know, he's back there giving me critiques, telling me what I need to work on, or if it's something good I did, you know, he's giving me praise. So it was definitely nice to to learn from him the entire season. So to both of them, I wish them the best of luck, with the Seahawks and the Titans. So.
Let me ask you this, because I hear you saying Coach Wilson, for example. Do you always refer to a coach by usually saying coach and then the last name when you're talking about, much like we would a teacher, like that's Mr. Martin or Mrs. Wender kind of thing?
It depends. So a lot of us, I'll switch. I'll call him Coach Wilson. I'll call him D. Will. Like most people will call him D. Will. I guess that's just his accepted nickname. Coach McDonald. I don't think I've ever called him this to his face, but just me personally, if I'm talking to somebody else about him, I'll say Coach Mac. Because I had a Coach McDonald in the past, so we would all call him Coach Mac. So that's what I'll call him. But yeah, for the most part, I'll usually start with Coach and then whatever their name is.
This is the funny thing about this, and teachers I know go through this. But if you meet him 25 years from now at some function or whatever, and you see him, is he still, "Oh, Coach Wilson, it's nice to see you again"?
Coach. Even coaches that I had from youth football, I'll still call them Coach because it doesn't feel right to call them anything else.
Yeah. No, I know that it really sticks with you. You do that. Okay, well that's great. Now Zach Orr, I want to talk a little bit about him. Obviously, a new guy in a sense, but a guy certainly from the Ravens, from the system with McDonald. The thing I want to talk about specifically relates to you directly, and that's that Zach is a committed nickel background. Okay, in two ways. First of all, he was a weak side linebacker who played next to C.J. Mosley and stayed on the field on third down. And he's also a guy who now has been in the McDonald system and watched them play committed nickel with Queen and Roquan on the field at the same time. How does that affect you? Well, the obvious thing is safety is usually the replacement for a weak side linebacker on a dime package, which the Ravens played basically none of last year, 10 snaps. So do you look at the thing? I think I look at the Ravens and say they need a whole bunch of safeties on the roster because they've got one guy who's playing slot corner. You want to have two guys at least who can play deep. You want to have one guy who can play dime, and you want to have one guy who's a backup that you can go to when somebody gets hurt. So I'm wondering in terms of Coach Orr, let's say it right, that do you expect him to stay with that committed nickel and give Simpson every chance to work it out there, or how would you expect that to go?
I think I could definitely see him doing that. I don't know like how one-to-one he's going to keep the defense from what we were running last year. But I know that whatever he does, I'm confident that it's going to work. Trent Simpson is a hell of a player, and he showed that in the first real opportunity he got against the Steelers. Like, he went off that game, and I remember throughout the season I was talking to him a lot, just trying to wish him luck throughout the season, tell him that everybody was behind him, and you could see his growth as a player a lot, and then it all culminated into that game against the Steelers, and he had a hell of a day. So he's definitely gonna step up this year, I feel. So I know that Zio shouldn't have any worries there.
Okay. All right, great. And as a former corner, you talked about safeties not necessarily being the kind of hard hitters. How would you feel about a dime opportunity? Is that something that you think fits your skill set if the Ravens were to go to dime?
I think that it definitely can. That's one thing that even while I was playing corner that I always kind of noticed about myself, that I am definitely more physical than is normal for the corner position. I can't really tell you when that started, but maybe it was like the turning point was maybe halfway through my collegiate career, where I just was like, yeah, you know what? Let me start getting a little bit more aggressive. But I definitely, I love getting my nose in there. I think there were a couple of times during the preseason where I was even beating some guys at the second level to the ball. So I think that I could definitely, thrive at that dime position. I feel like I do have the mentality and the skill set for it. But then, ultimately, wherever I'm placed, that's where I'm going to excel. So,
okay. All right. Well, that's the way to think of it, I guess. Let's talk about Stone, split field safety, really, primarily. Not that he didn't try and tackle, he just didn't have the greatest tackling year this last year. It used to like to go downhill, or at least it seemed it, but a great coverage guy on the back end. How much are you trying to model to that, since it seems like that's where the Ravens are right now. Don't know if it'll change with Zio, but be a split field back and two deep team where you have some rotation from that. How are you training? Is that a more of a focus of your training to get ready to play that role?
It is. So I want to be able to do all of it for sure. To be like, strong safety coming down, filling in the run, or a free safety, just like kind of back there roaming in space. That definitely was one of the areas I was trying to work on a lot throughout the season. Gino definitely did a hell of a job doing that, as is evident in his 7 interceptions last season. So he's definitely somebody that I would like to pay attention to, each practice. Then when we were watching film, just kind of like watching what was he doing to get himself into those positions where he's able to make those plays. So he does have really good technique. A few times he would do a good job of, kind of holding off one area of the field, get the quarterback to look somewhere else, and then he would, go jump around over there. I definitely like to pay attention to him. Kyle Hamilton was pretty rangy in space too. It's kind of scary too, because like with his body type, like you might not think that that he'd be able to move as quickly as he does, but he covers a lot of ground really quickly. And he does it really, he looks really fluid while he's doing it too. So yeah, the two of them, I definitely like to pay attention to.
The question I have for a player like Hamilton, who did not test well in terms of his 40 time and whatnot, but I see him as being much faster in terms of his on-field play than what he would test in terms of the 40, because his instincts are so good. And I always bring it up when we talk safeties for the draft or whatever we might be talking, that instincts are so much more important than speed at that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if football's not track, so some people aren't going to run the greatest 40, not going to run like a 4.3 or something, but they can still play just as fast, if not faster, than somebody who does run a 4.3. It's all about your instincts, like you said, how well you know your own plays, how well you know your opponent for the week, how well you can like anticipate what's coming and, get yourself from point A to point B. If you might not be like the fastest guy in a straight line, but the good thing is that football is not played in a straight line. So there are ways to make up for a lack of linear speed.
All right. Let's talk about what's next for 2024. So I think we talked a little bit about this in terms of what your plan is, in terms of how long football can last for you. But just in terms of 2024, the Ravens are going through an incredibly turbulent offseason in terms of losing tons of players. How do you see this playing out as they go into really shaping the 90-man roster and whatnot?
It's definitely pretty crazy to see all the news that's popping up every single week. It's like somebody else is gone each day. But I'm sure that happens like all across the league. I'm sure they're used to it, and they're used to figuring out how to navigate through that. But for me personally, I would like to think that's pretty good for me, because they, like you said, there is a need at safety. I believe there are only two signed right now between Williams and Hamilton. I was a guy that was, that was there developing for the entire season, and they seemed to like everything that I was doing. I believe in myself. I'm confident in my abilities, and I know that I have a lot of upside. I know that whoever signs me is going to be getting a hell of a player. I'd like to think that everything that's been going on bodes very well for my future.
So let's talk about life after football as well. And I know you had an interesting story about this. I think it's worth repeating for people who didn't hear the original episode, but talk about some of your passions in life. And I know you have an engineering degree from Connecticut and Vanderbilt, the combination, right? But Vanderbilt gave you a degree.
The engineering degree is from Connecticut. And then I majored in something called human development studies when I was over at Vanderbilt. But yeah, the engineering is from UConn.
Okay. So, but then that might surprise people that your passion is what?
My passion is cooking. So for anybody who's listening and now who didn't hear the first episode, when did it start? It was back during, it was when the pandemic started in 2020. I had been home for probably the longest time. Longest time I had been up to that point since leaving high school. Cause school sent people home in March. We didn't go back until I think July. So there were a lot of days I was just, kind of sitting at home, kind of trying to figure out what to do with myself. Cause I couldn't go anywhere. My mom was super strict, so she didn't let us leave the house at all. So I eventually started getting into cooking. So I was watching my parents, make, lunch, dinner, just kind of trying to, pick up a few things. And I eventually started to make pizzas. So my mom would go to Wegmans, she would get pizza dough, bring it back home, like get top of the pizza sauce, pepperoni, cheese, whatever. So I would, make some pizzas, give it to everybody in the house, see what their reactions were. And it was well received, tasted good. Everybody loved it. So I would start posting that on my story whenever I would make a pizza, post on Instagram, get other people's reactions. And, I'll get a ton of feedback from people. People seemed to really like what I was doing. So what I eventually did was I posted a little poll, or like a question box, or whatever. So I would have people give me suggestions. Hey, what kinds of stuff do you want to see me make? So I got a bunch of suggestions, but the one that kept popping up the most was cinnamon rolls. So I was like, okay, I think I could do that. So I went online, I looked up a bunch of different recipes just to figure out how they're made, because I wanted to learn how to make them from scratch. Which meant I had to learn to make the dough and everything myself. Mm-hmm. So looked at a bunch of different recipes, figured out what the general process is, and just pulled from a bunch of different areas, came up with like my own little version of them. And I made some cinnamon rolls one day. I didn't tell anybody, but my mom walked downstairs. Whole kitchen smelled like a bakery. She comes down, cinnamon rolls are out of the oven. I just finished putting the icing on them. So I gave her one of them, and then she nearly passes out. And then she says, you need to sell these, because these are really good. So I gave them to the rest of my family, and they had the same reaction. They said that they were really good. So what I started doing was, I had my mom make a flyer. I should have emailed it to you, because, maybe you could like post that somewhere, but yeah.
No, that'd be cool.
The cinnamon rolls were on there. I advertised it to everybody I knew in the Lehigh Valley, selling some homemade cinnamon rolls. If you guys want to buy any, let me know. I can make you a half dozen or a full dozen. So it turned into a mini business, and I would usually do it around the holidays, around like Christmas, New Year's time. Each time I would make about 100 cinnamon rolls or more, which is a lot of work. So I would get up really early in the morning, start making them, and I would, after they were finished, I would go out, drive all around the Lehigh Valley, delivering them to people, get back home late at night, made a decent amount of money on the side, which is pretty cool. So that kind of kickstarted like my whole, making and selling food, kind of thing. So when I eventually got back to UConn, I think this was maybe sometime in 2021, I started advertising to the team. I made a couple people some cinnamon rolls, but people wanted me to figure out how to make like actual meals. So I figured out how to make like a seafood mac and cheese. I didn't talk about this on the episode before. I made mac and cheese and put a lot of seafood in it. So I mixed salmon, shrimp, crab, and lobster meat. Super expensive to make, but I made a pretty good profit off of it, because I was selling to a lot of people because it became so popular. So it became something I did like very regularly. Made a lot of money doing that. So that kind of all like just fueled my passion for cooking and sharing my food with other people. So I think that whenever I eventually retire from football, I could definitely see myself doing something in the food business. And then on top of that, it's kind of something new that I just thought about, but I've talked to my parents a lot about real estate. So they suggest that if, I'm able to make enough money, I could buy a couple of, rental properties, maybe like, two or three, and just, rent those out to people and live off of those for a while. So that's something that I could also do on the side. So it would be, rental properties and cooking.
There's a guy with a plan. You'd love to hear that from a football player, and not all, I mean, you might last 10 years in the league and, have a career like Brent Urban. He's at the other side of this, by the way, and this goes to all the fungible guys. Worley is in the same category, that they're already kind of automatically on the handshake team at the end of camp to be cut and then re-signed to give additional roster room at the, between mm-hmm. 53 and 57, let's say. So it's that lack of surety about your exact position in on the roster and whether or not you're going to be there, what week you might be back, exists throughout your whole career, unless you're really a star player or on your rookie deal where the clock has already started. But it's great to hear, you know, you have these kind of plans for after football. I really love to hear that. Jeremy, we really appreciate you coming on again. Anything else you want to tell people about what's in the future for you?
I guess hopefully I have some news soon. I'm definitely confident that I'll be hearing something, sooner or later. So for all of you guys that, tuned in last time and are tuning into this podcast, continue to follow along with my journey. And, I would hopefully like to be back on this podcast, again in the future.
That'd be great. And we hope it's after a great complete first year with the Ravens, that'd be a terrific follow-up to have. Anywhere people can hit you up to talk football with you online?
So my Twitter, I know my Twitter and my Instagram are very similar. The underscore is like in a different spot for each of those. Give me 2 seconds to check.
I've got it. It's at J underscore Luke, at J underscore Luke 21.
So that's the Twitter. And then the Instagram is it's J Luce underscore 21. So for Instagram, okay. The underscore is after the loose, and for Twitter, it's before. So yeah, either one of those places.
All right. Outstanding. Obviously, Jeremy, a great young man to talk to. So if you have questions, I'm sure he'll answer them for you. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be in a film study short this offseason, please hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to hear from you. Always looking for new people to talk football with. It can be about the Recollection series if you want to talk about a particular Ravens player of the past, or it could be about any other topic which you're passionate about. I have very much an open mic way of doing the show, and I love to meet new people. Jeremy, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me again.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.